ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Good morning. Welcome to AM. It's Thursday, the 9th of May. I'm Sabra Lane, coming to you from Nipaluna, Hobart. The former girlfriend of the man charged over the killings of two Australian brothers and their American friend has turned prosecution witness. A court's heard that Jesus Gerardo allegedly confessed to killing Callum and Jake Robinson and their friend Jack Carter Road to rob them of their belongings. North America correspondent Carrington Clark was in the court in Ensenada.
Jesus Gerardo, also known as El Cacas, sat in a very small courtroom here in Ensenada to hear the prosecution's case against him. Most of the just over hour time allotted was just for the judge to outline that case. And during most of that, El Cacas sat pretty impassively listening to the judge. But the major development today is that the prosecution says that the former girlfriend of Jesus Gerardo has now turned prosecution witness regarding these murders of the two Australians, Jake and Callum Robinson, and their friend Carter Road. Now, allegedly, El Cacas, either the day of or the day after, the timeline is still confusing about exactly when the men were killed, but he is moved to see his then girlfriend, and he says to her, and I'm going to paraphrase because it is profane, "I screwed up three gringos." She then asks, "What do you mean?" He says, "I killed them." He also then outlines that they had lots of expensive belongings, lots of money, electronics. He gives her a mobile phone that belonged to one of the victims, and he then takes her to show her her truck and the new tires that he's put on them. And the prosecutors allege that those tires had come off the vehicle that the Robinson brothers and Mr. Road had been traveling in. It's also important to note that the girlfriend alleges that she is also a victim of El Cacas, says that she's a domestic violence survivor, and that the judge has said, given accusations of gendered violence, that that will be taken into account as they proceed with this case. Important to note, the charges have not yet been upgraded. We did expect that he would be charged with the three murders. Instead, he's still just charged as being responsible for their disappearance, but the prosecutors very clearly alleging that he is the one who killed them.
So what's next?
So he has now been remanded in custody for the next 6 months. The next scheduled court date is not until November the 8th. He did not enter a plea today. We do expect, though, that murder charges will be laid soon. Prosecutors also say more than one person is most likely involved. Given the nature of these killings, the way the men were killed, the way the bodies were disposed of, being transported 6 or 7 kilometres to a well, the fact that they would have had to require more than one person to, you would think, to move them.
That's North America correspondent Carrington Clark in Ensenada. Could a large proportion of mental illness be prevented in Australia? Newly published research says nearly half of all common mental health problems like anxiety, depression and substance abuse can be traced back to childhood abuse and neglect. It's prompted calls for a new era of preventative policies. Alison Branley from the specialist reporting team has the story and a warning: it contains some distressing content.
Angela McCauley was 11 years old when the ABC first met her and her mother Nicola for a Four Corners story on vulnerable families in 1996.
It's been really hard over the time.
But even then, the little girl had a secret. She'd been sexually abused by her stepfather at age 6. He was later convicted.
I've carried all these big burdens that weren't even mine.
The trauma triggered 3 decades of mental health problems, substance abuse and self-harm as a teen, through to postnatal depression.
Flashbacks. They can come in at the most inappropriate times, and then you're back in that moment and then you're trying to struggle, you know, like you feel guilt and shame.
A University of Sydney study has now established a direct link between childhood abuse and neglect and the mental health crisis. The study of more than 15,000 Australians found child maltreatment accounted for 41% of suicide attempts, 35% of self-harm cases, and 21% of those with depression. Lead researcher Dr. Lucy Grummet says the findings should be treated as a national health priority.
These results tell us just how many people are suffering from mental health conditions that are potentially preventable.
Her team is proposing a kind of immunisation schedule for mental health to help identify and deal with abuse and neglect early.
We know there are effective home visitation programs and parent education programs that provide support to parents who may be struggling and have shown to reduce rates of child abuse and neglect down the track. Improving access to childcare, expanding paid parental leave, increasing the minimum wage, improving housing affordability. They have empirical evidence that they can reduce rates of child abuse and neglect.
Mental health charity Prevention United is advocating for more funding to stop mental health problems emerging and have backed the findings. Chief Executive Stephen Carbone says it's estimated that less than 1% of the mental health budget goes to prevention.
In fact, there's been a big, steady increase in per capita funding for mental health over the last 30 years, but that hasn't translated into reductions in the rate or the prevalence. And in fact, amongst young people, it's gone up phenomenally.
He says Australia's child protection system is too geared towards reacting to problems after they emerge, rather than better supporting at-risk families.
It's a mix of programs and social policies that we know can help to reduce the rates of child maltreatment in Australia. We're just not really implementing those programs as well as we should be.
Stephen Carbone from the Prevention United, ending Alison Branley's report. The cost of living parliamentary inquiry singled out supermarkets for contributing to the high rates of food waste in Australia. It's recommended ways to reduce food bills and waste, as some Australians resort to rummaging through supermarket bins because they can't afford to shop. Some so-called dumpster divers say that what they find highlights the gross amounts of food needlessly wasted in a cost of living crisis. John Daly filed this report from Perth.
With gloves and a head torch, John digs through the bins out the back of major supermarkets for his weekly groceries. He calls it food hustling.
Yeah, I mean, you find pretty much everything you see in the supermarket, you can find in the back in the bins.
One rule of thumb is you never dig from the bottom of the bin.
Why?
Because that's where all the juices are.
John bought his first home during the pandemic, but now he's unemployed. Dumpster diving has helped him keep on top of the bills.
I would have to say I was able to pay more of my home loan down.
He times his runs at dusk when stores close, then fills an empty milk crate with food destined for landfill.
We can have a quick look in the green bins, because the green bins are usually for veggies.
Oh, holy dooly. We've just opened up this bin.
There's a lot of bread.
A lot of bread.
I'm old. What's the date?
John says what he finds on these dumpster dives would surprise the average consumer.
Well, I think they'd be shocked. And I think once you get over the initial stigma of, like, you know, I suppose stigma is, oh, look at that guy, he's going to the bin, he must be poor. You know, change your mindset, think of it, it's a resource.
This food is deemed unfit for consumption, but people are resorting to eating it in this cost of living crisis. A Salvation Army survey of 1,500 people needing financial relief found 1 in 4 ate expired or spoiled food, while 1 in 20 ate food from rubbish bins. In Hobart, the community group Grassroots Action Network Tasmania began searching supermarket bins to help struggling members. Network member Danny Carney says it eventually took on a more political element.
You know, a lot of people get into dumpster diving to kind of meet their own food needs, but it's quite a radicalising act when you see there's so much unnecessary struggle happening when so much of this stuff goes into the bin.
The network raised the issue of supermarkets' waste to the Senate inquiry into supermarket pricing. The Greens-chaired inquiry has now recommended investigating cosmetic standards on fruit and vegetables, setting up a supermarket waste reporting system, and reforming use-by and best-before labels. The Australia Institute's senior economist Matt Grudenoff says supermarkets ultimately profit from Australians' wasteful ways.
Supermarkets have been talking about this, but we think that they're going too slowly, and we're concerned that in part that might be the profit motive. That is, they're making a large profit from households wasting food, and so there is an incentive for them not to do more.
In a statement to AM, Woolworths said it diverted 80% of its food waste from landfill last year and partners with hunger relief organisations. Coles said last year it donated 20,000 tonnes of unsold edible food to food rescue organisations Second Bite and Food Bank. The federal government has 3 months to respond to the Senate inquiry's recommendations.
John Daly reporting there. The federal government's releasing its future gas strategy today, saying more of the resource will be needed in the decades ahead, as it'll be crucial in decarbonising Australia's electricity grid and helping other nations. Just to give you an idea about that last point, Australia exported $91 billion worth of liquid natural gas in 2022, supplying 40% of Japan's gas needs, 36% of Taiwan's and 24% of Singapore's. Madeleine King is the Federal Resources Minister. Minister, thanks for joining AM.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here, Sabra. Thanks for having me.
Environmentalists and some within your own party will be pretty cranky with this policy. Critics say the resource needs to stay in the ground. How will you convince them that this is the strategy Australia needs?
Well, the future gas strategy is driven by facts and data. So we've had an extensive amount of time we've spent on producing an analytical report, which will be published alongside the strategy, and that's a report that brings together the vast amounts of studies that have been done on gas supply and demand, and a lot of forecasts around gas, and not all of which are extensive and reliable. We've drawn the best that we can while taking in public submissions from the community, from environmental groups, from local councils, from unions, and also from the industry. So there's a lot of we've heard from a lot of people around how they think gas should be used within our economy in the context of net zero.
Well, under this policy, how much gas will be used for Australia's own energy requirements by, well, 2030 and 2050?
Well, the strategy goes through that. And the thing about it, it is hard to predict. But what we do know is there will be a need for gas, because there are many uses for gas that we can't substitute. We hope to substitute, but we don't know when that will be possible. So what I'm talking about there is the processing of critical minerals or some high heat manufacturing uses, which we hope we'll be able to use hydrogen for. And indeed, we're investing in the research in that, and so are other countries as well and companies. But in the meantime, you can't have wishful thinking that might happen without having the backup, which is gas. So the 5 million households around the country that rely on gas for their heating and energy, whilst we transition to electrification, that gas needs to be affordable. And to be affordable, you need a reliable supply.
The gas reservation policy seems to have worked well in WA. Should proposed fields in Narrabri in New South Wales and Beetaloo up in the Northern Territory be guaranteeing supplies for domestic use to ensure there isn't a shortfall?
Well, my understanding around Narrabri is indeed they have committed for that to be a domestic use field, and that's what will happen. That's what Santos have committed to the New South Wales government about. And if the New South Wales government has a sensible conversation, which I'm sure they've already done with Santos, that's exactly the result they can achieve. So I think that one's a very helpful example to point to around how producers and the state governments can work together to make sure there is supply. And if Narrabri comes online, it relieves quite a lot of pressure on the gas supply in that state, because it doesn't produce any gas at all. But more importantly, for everyday consumers, it will make it more affordable, because the gas sits close to the demand. So it's important that we decrease demand at the same time, but you've got to have the gas to firm up the renewables to 2030 and beyond. So Narrabri is important.
The federal authority has just given approval to Key Infrastructure for Chevron's Gorgon project in WA to produce about 3 billion tonnes of CO2 equivalent emissions during the next 50 years. That's what will happen, according to the Australia Institute. And it points out that this approval's come despite Chevron failing to achieve carbon capture and storage targets, which were a condition of the project's original approvals. Is that right?
I haven't seen that report, I've got to say, but I'm happy to talk about the Gorgon carbon capture and storage project. And it hasn't reached its targets. That's absolutely correct. And I think Chevron will be the first to say those targets were a bit ambitious for a project that has a lot of challenges. But the thing is, they're working with the state government on that problem. They have paid to the state government monies as penalties for not reaching their targets and set about abating, but in other ways. But importantly,
why then should further approval be given if they're having problems meeting current conditions?
Because they have already sequestered 9 million tonnes of CO2. So though they might not have met targets, and I accept that, but what they have done is still remarkable, and it is still the largest CCS project in the world. So what they are doing is important, and if they get it right, and we should encourage Chevron to invest their money into their research to get it right, they will achieve what the International Energy Agency is calling for, which is more CCS projects to make sure we sequester CO2 so we can indeed reach net zero by 2050, because as the International Agency has said a number of times, without CCS, we won't reach net zero. So I don't think carbon capture is the only answer. It's far from it. Absolutely. There is so many things we need to do to reach net zero. We need to drive down demand. We need to capture gas. We need to move away from gas as much as we can, where we can. But the thing is, in many uses, we cannot. And until other alternatives are viable, like hydrogen, that gas and low emissions gas will be needed.
Thanks, Minister, for talking to AM.
A pleasure. Thank you, Sabra.
The Federal Resources Minister, Madeleine King. Many older Australians and their families say residing independently at home without going into care is how they want to live out their lives. But older people are facing delays accessing the federal government-funded support, which helps with cleaning, home maintenance and modifications, because service providers say they're underfunded and understaffed. Political reporter Evelyn Manfield has the story.
Sue and Mike Willett love living at their home on South Australia's Fluorio Peninsula, and they don't want to leave.
Just being our own home, it's comfortable. We've been here for about 13 years, I think.
But in recent years, cleaning has become harder, especially for Mike, who's had a series of falls.
Vacuuming was difficult. Mopping was difficult because it was that bend and push and pull, which both of us had difficulty with.
The Commonwealth Home Support Program, also known as CHISP, helps keep more than 800,000 older people living at home through cleaning and gardening help and home modifications like handrails. It's different to home care packages, which are for older Australians who have higher needs. Sue and Mike were assessed and approved for cleaning help under CHISP, but when they went to book a cleaner, they couldn't get one, despite calling several providers.
I called them on a regular basis from the beginning of 2023, well, right through 2023 and into the beginning of 24. And it wasn't until middle of February that we actually could get a cleaner.
The various providers told her they were understaffed and had run out of government funding.
It's not much point in offering them to anybody if they know that, in fact, the funds aren't there.
Sue and Mike's federal MP is independent Rebecca Sharkey.
We're seeing, you know, really up to 10 calls a week or 10 people coming into the office saying that they're desperately needing support and there's nothing available. They're either, you know, attempting to do these things themselves and that brings its own dangers, particularly with older people climbing on ladders.
Aged Care Minister Annika Wells declined an interview, but a spokesperson for her says further funding will be a decision for the budget next week. Her office also says funding for the program has increased from $2.6 billion to just above $3 billion in recent years. But the sector says that's largely to keep pace with wages and isn't enough. Aged care consultant and chair of Meals on Wheels, Paul Sadler, says there are services across the country with their books closed.
There simply isn't enough investment from the government going into CHSP, which means that the growth of the program has not kept pace with the ageing of the population.
Craig Gear is the chief executive of the Older Persons Advocacy Network.
Some people are waiting weeks to months to access these really important services that might not seem a lot to you and I, But someone having their garden done, someone having a rail put in, someone having the cleaning done means that they don't put themselves at risk, but it also means they're getting also some social supports, but also could be around some low-level physio interaction that keeps them mobile and keeps their function up. So we can't wait in that sense to hold off these services.
The Health and Aged Care Department says older people requiring urgent services are prioritised.
That report by Evelyn Manfield, and that's AM for today. Thanks for your company. I'm Sabra Lane.
Hi, I'm Sam Hawley, host of the ABC News Daily podcast. When a porn star took to the stand in a New York courtroom, her account of sex with Donald Trump was so detailed and at times graphic, the former US president's lawyers called for a mistrial. Trump denies they had sex at all. Today, the senior legal affairs reporter for Politico, Josh Gerstein, takes us through the evidence. Look for the ABC News Daily podcast on the ABC Listen app.